and welcome to the Ship.Energy podcast. My name is Mark Williams, and I'm delighted today to be able to introduce our guest, Mr. Thomas Riske, the CEO and one of the partners of Norse Power, the Helsinki-based manufacturer of rotor sails, sometimes known as Flettner Rotors. Thomas is a physics and economics and business graduate with two master's degrees and a history of entrepreneurship. Before he founded Norse Power in 2012, he was for more than a decade an executive at Innofactor, one of Finland's leading IT businesses. Now, if you don't know rotor sails, don't worry, because Thomas is going to introduce us to them. But they're currently on board a number of vessels, including successful trials on the Maersk Pelican product tanker, the Viking Grace cruise ferry, the ro-ro ship Estraden, and more recently the hybrid ferry, the Copenhagen, the Scandline ship. The GHG emission potential of rotor sails has been estimated at up to 100 megatons per year of carbon dioxide. So they can be a valuable contribution to getting shipping down to zero carbon. So Thomas, thank you so much for joining us today and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you first, for the benefit of our listeners, to tell us about the rotor sail as a concept and about Norse Power's product, please.
Okay, so we are actually bringing sailing back to shipping. Rotor sail, it's doing just the same as any sailing boat sail. When there's a favorable wind condition, the sail produces forward thrust, pushes the ship forward through its internal structure. And through this, we reduce the main engine load on the ship, and we reduce the fuel consumption and all related emissions. So actually that it works, it's quite logical. In the old times, ships were only moved by sails. This is called nowadays auxiliary wind propulsion, meaning that we try to replace as big part of the main engine power with our mechanical sails as possible. On a windy day, you can sail a lot, save a lot. You can even make it a sailing ship. When there's no wind, you just use the main engine as previously to propel the ship forward.
And this is quite an old technology, I believe. It was nearly a century old.
That's correct. Mr. Flettner from Germany and Mr. Savonius from Finland, they found this technology in 1920s, and Mr. Flettner, who is the known innovator of the technology, also built some prototype ships back in 1920s. He crossed the Atlantic Ocean with this technology. He proved that it works, that the sailing properties are quite favorable. It's a very effective mechanical sail. Anyhow, the time wasn't right in 1920s to make it a working product. Nobody was interested in reducing emissions. Fuel was cheap. And he even had some challenges how to make the devices work mechanically. So what we did at Norse Power, we took this old innovation, we modernized the technology, we call it nowadays rotor sail, and we are bringing it to the market.
Yes, I suppose in those days, we were at the peak of the great ocean liner era, weren't we, when the liners were trying to cross the Atlantic in the fastest time possible. So they were employing huge either steam turbines or diesel engines, I suppose, at that time. So perhaps sail was less interesting to them. And there were, of course.
That's exactly how it was. Sails were finally disappearing from the world market, and diesel engines were coming. So that was the era in 1920s.
So now, of course, the liners have gone the way, being replaced by air travel, haven't they? And shipping is much more about cargo shipping. And back then, there were, of course, there were steel-masted clippers still competing in the grain race from Australia back to Europe back in the 1920s and 1930s, but far too small these days to be economical with the cargo sizes that we have. But what makes it interesting, I suppose, is that the sail can make a comeback as not as a complete replacement for the mechanical engine, but as a partial replacement.
That's absolutely correct. In typical cases, we can reduce the fuel consumption and emissions between 5% and 20% on average. So meaning that we can replace up to 20% of the main engine with our mechanical sails, expected that we can install enough of our units on board.
So with the IMO's ambitions for CO2 reductions by 2030 and then by 2050 getting to net zero as soon as possible after that, this can make a significant contribution. But there are I think about half a dozen ships that have these on board at the moment, or am I out of date?
That's correct. We have so far fitted 5 ships with rotor sails. Our latest installation was for Norwegian Sea Cargo. We fitted their RoRo ship with 2 pieces of 35-meter world record rotor sails, which are actually tilting, so that when the ship is passing under a bridge, they can lower down the rotor sails to reduce the air draft. And we have today one more delivery going on. We expect that ship number 6 with Norsepower rotor sails is starting to sail around April this year, and there are more, of course, coming.
So that's quite interesting that that you said they could tilt, because these things can be quite tall, can't they? Sort of up to 30 meters tall, so air draft can be an issue.
On like lower ships like tankers and bulk carriers, we typically use just these upright non-tilting devices. But for higher ships like ro-ro ships or cruise ferries, often we need that tilt device. So it's quite fancy to see also that feature now entering the market.
So this tilting and air draft issue, it's good to know that it can be overcome, because it can be a problem around different ports in the world. We had the sort of multi-million-dollar Bayonne Bridge issue about 10 years ago, where the container ships had got too big to fit under the bridge to get into New York and New Jersey Harbor. So they had to lift the bridge by several feet, which was a big feat of engineering for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, I think, who are in charge usually of port traffic in the States. So that's a good thing. But there are 6... or 8 ships with these installed at the moment. The global commercial shipping fleet of ocean-going ships is perhaps 80,000 vessels. Do you think that – what's the market reach for the rotor sail?
We have analyzed the fleet, and I think maybe 80,000 is the ultimate total global fleet. I think that there are roughly 60,000 medium to large ships which could be fitted with some kind of auxiliary wind propulsion. And of these 60,000, we see that 30,000 ships are such that they are a good fit with the Flettner rotors, with our rotor sails. So that's our target, and that's our market potential.
That's huge. I mean, we're not quite talking sort of Google, B2C type businesses here. Shipping is a niche business still, but for shipping, that's a significant development. The manufacturing and installation of these then is something that you're going to have to work in close partnership with the shipyards and manufacturers. Is this a franchising opportunity? How will the technology get to the shipyards, either for retrofit or for new building?
We have a big network of suppliers manufacturing components for our rotor sails and delivering different service and maintenance and installation operations. So we are in deep cooperation with roughly 100 companies who help us to manufacture and install our rotor sails. And it entirely depends on the case. If it's a new built ship to be fitted with rotor sails, then what they do with the ship is that they build kind of foundations for our rotor sails together with the hull of the ship. That's the cheapest way to get rotor sails installed. There's a new built ship, then you just lift the rotor sails on board, get them bolted on and plug in the cables and start sailing. But we can also do retrofits so that we fit an existing ship with our rotor sails. And in that case, we do it so that typically during docking period of the ship, we install pre-manufactured foundations on the deck of the ship and pull the cables needed. And then it's just like in a new built case, when the ship has foundations and cabling and automation systems, you just lift the ready-made rotor sails on board and start sailing.
So if I've got a large flat deck type vessel like an oil tanker or a bulk carrier, whereabouts is does the rotor sail sit on the deck?
You should find locations for rotor sails which are as well exposed to the wind as possible. Just like a sailing boat, you need to have wind to the sails to make them work in an efficient way. Then you have to make sure that you have enough distance between 2 rotor sail units so that they don't shadow each other, so that you don't lose in the savings because of those effects. And then you, of course, have to think about the air draft of the ship. Do you need a tilting model, or is upright model okay for you, and you also have to consider how many router cells you locate so that you still see out from the bridge, so that you don't endanger any safety or maneuvering of the ship. But we can typically easily find locations for the router cells which fulfill all these criteria. Then we just plan the installation and start manufacturing the router cells and fitting them on board.
I see. With traditional sails, you have your flat sheet and you have the wind behind you pushing you along, or you can tack through a crosswind. Is it the same with a rotor sail? Do you have to have the wind coming from a certain direction? Because with a mechanical engine, you can sail into the wind or across the wind. Or because of the nature of its construction, can it operate with wind coming in from any vector?
This is actually just like sailing. Of course, the physical properties are somewhat different, but the same rules of physics are applied to rotor sails and to sailing boat sails, meaning it's impossible to sail straight against the wind. You need to have some angle between your ship and the true wind to enable tacking against the wind. With a typical sailing boat sails, that kind of true wind angle limit is about 40 degrees. With rotor sails, it's about 20 degrees. So this is more efficient device to produce lift to push the ship forward. But in a way, same physics is behind, and you have to think about it also with this kind of sailing. Of course, our automation system is doing that. It's automatically optimizing the rotor sails to any condition, but in a way, it's just like sailing a sailing boat.
So the condition of sea breezes and sea winds is going to be important. Of course, it's very easy to monitor those these days. There are buoys all around the world. There's a live data feed of winds all around the world. We've got satellite technology and so on these days. So how much effect have the users of rotor sails so far found that trying to employ the rotor sail has on their navigation? Are they tacking? Are they not following as direct a route?
Our basic concept is such that the ship is just taking the route it wants to take, and we just optimize the sails to any prevailing condition. But we see that if the ship typically makes longer voyages, like let's say across the Atlantic or across the Pacific, it makes a lot of sense to integrate the rotor sails with kind of route optimization system, so that the entire route from A to B is selected so that the winds are optimized against the rotor sails. To do that, you need to have a good wave and wind forecast for the entire voyage, and of course you need to know the sailing physics of the rotor sails. But that's possible, and it makes sense. It increases the savings.
The savings, I think, are important, especially now. We're coming out of a period where fuel prices have been very cheap. We're hopefully, with vaccinations being introduced around the world, then we'll come out of the public health crisis and see some sort of economic recovery in 2021. And that's likely to lead to an increase in demand for transport fuels. And I think oil and gas prices are rising again. The marine fuel prices are going up. So, someone thinking about alternatives to the typical forms of marine fuel that are available now, fuel oil, gas oil or gas, are going to be thinking, well, what sort of price range would make rotor sails economically viable? That is to say, if a rotor sail was to add $100 a day to capital and OPEX costs, just to pluck a figure out of the air, but saves $110 a day in fuel, then it's marginally viable. But if it saves $200 a day in fuel, then why wouldn't I spend 50 cents to save a dollar? So what sort of price range do you think for fuel oil makes the rotor sails economically viable? Are they viable now at today's prices, or are we expecting fuel prices to go up and the viability of rotor sails to increase with that?
I just had a look at fuel prices yesterday, and for me it was a pleasure to see that low sulfur fuel oil price is close to $450 per metric ton today. I think that's already making a pretty nice business case for rotor sails, at least on the windy routes in the world, based on the fuel cost savings alone. But what I see on the market is that IMO regulation is coming to the game, and there will be carbon taxes or emissions trading, and already already receive forecast from potential customers that price of carbon can be up to $100 per ton of carbon in some like term, let's say 5 to 10 years from today. And when you think that one ton of fuel, when it's burnt on board a ship, it's producing roughly 3.1 tons of carbon. So that $100 per ton of carbon is $330 addition to the price of saved fuel. So now I really see that that combination of fuel cost and carbon pricing will make this a business, and finally any sailing with large ships will be economically viable.
So already today these things these rotor sails are viable, and especially with the introduction of carbon schemes, carbon pricing, then they're going to become more viable.
Yeah, that's how I see it. But that said, in a way, we are highly economically viable today on the windiest routes of the world. When the carbon emissions trading or any carbon tax is entering the game, the potential market is widening. It makes more and more sense to use the rotor sails also on less windy seas. So that's how it will happen, and this is what I anticipate on the world market.
Mm-hmm. So that capital outlay then still can be recovered, still has to be placed. And I understand, not trying to advertise it, but I understand that you have a pay-as-you-save scheme to help with the cost of installing and operating these units.
That's correct. We have some external debt financing available. So we are nowadays also able to offer our rotor sales against a fixed monthly or yearly fee. Expected that we can make a long-term agreement with the ship owner, typically between 5 and 10 years, against that fixed monthly or yearly fee. It can also make a lot of economic sense through that one. Typically, the deal is so that the savings are, let's say, 1.5 times the cost of the devices on that monthly basis.
So it can be done. It sounds like it's going to be a vital tool in the toolbox that ship owners have to meet the IMO's greenhouse gas reduction targets. You know, 50% by 2050 is a lot to ask. But if this can save between 5 and 20%, then it's a significant contributor. Do you think that there are a number of non-fuel related technology initiatives out there that can cut greenhouse gas emissions from shipping by increasing efficiency? So things like hull and air side hydrodynamics and aerodynamics, things like air lubrication of hulls, Mewis ducts, propeller bosses, and so on. Do you think the rotor sail is going to become one of a suite of tools available to meet the IMO's 2030 target? We're sort of looking for that level of acceptance and integration into new building technology.
I think that this is becoming a very viable tool in those terms. Mechanical sails, they have one of the biggest fuel consumption reduction potentials of all of these kind of tools. So I really see that when we want to reduce the emissions, more and more these kind of tools are needed. I also see that energy price of shipping, it will increase all the time from now on. As said, there will be those carbon taxes or emissions trading. It all means that you have to go to cleaner fuels, which are more expensive, so energy cost is increased. And together with that, payback for any energy saving will go down. So I think in any longer term, let's say 10 to 20 years from today, ships will be built so that first you minimize the fuel consumption through any innovations like rotor sails or innovative hull forms or something like that. And in the end, you just have to buy that minimal amount of fuel to move your ship.
Mm-hmm. That will be something to look forward to. But in the meantime, it's good to know that technologies like this could be still retrofitted to the existing fleet, because we're not going to be able to replace, if it's 60,000 ships, as you put it. And you're right, you know, above a certain size. Yes, it's about 60,000 in the global fleet. That's still a lot of ships to renew. So that's not going to happen overnight. So we need technologies that we can fit today.
That's correct. And typical lifespan of a ship, it's up to 30 years. So it takes time to renew the fleet. So retrofit solutions are essentially needed to decarbonize shipping.
Fantastic. Well, great. Well, Thomas, thank you so much for coming to join us today. Really appreciate hearing about this, and best of luck with it. I think it sounds like this is a viable technology. It's already been proven to work, and at some point the new building market is going to pick back up, and then I'm sure that this technology is going to be one of a number that ship owners are going to be considering for their fleet renewals.
I think so too. Thank you for a pleasant chat.
Thank you again for joining us. And thank you to all our listeners out there for joining us today. We'll see you again on the Ship.Energy podcast.